All right, so today we're diving into a pretty significant Ohio Supreme Court case, Rogers v. Runfola. It's a 1991 decision that honestly I think still has a big impact on, how we think about non-compete agreements in Ohio.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those cases I feel like that law students and anybody looking at employment law or business contracts, it's one you really got to know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what makes it so interesting is that like it really gets at that core tension between like, okay, an employer needs to protect their business interests, things like client relationships and goodwill and all that. But then you also have like the individual's right to work and earn a living, So it's finding that balance.
Right, exactly. It's that classic kind of push and pull.
Yeah.
And this case tries to sort of navigate that.
Right. And in this case, like the people at the heart of it are Barbara Rogers and Nicholas Marone, and they were both court reporters working for Thomas Runfola's firm. And like as part of their employment, they had these agreements with non-compete clauses. And like on the surface, you might think, okay, pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, it seems like something you just kind of sign, without thinking too much about it. But when you look closer, that's where it gets really interesting.
Totally. So basically, their contracts had these two main restrictions. One was a 2-year ban on working for like a competing court reporting business within Franklin County, which is where Columbus, Ohio is located. And then the other one was this lifetime ban on like reaching out to or soliciting any of Runfola's clients.
Yeah, and you can already start to see like, oh wow, lifetime. That's a pretty significant restriction right there.
And here's like this little detail that's really important from a contract law perspective. Rogers, she started as an at-will employee, and so the non-compete, it didn't actually become like a binding part of her employment until Runfola offered her job security, and it was that promise of job security that legally we call it consideration that actually made the agreement solid. It wasn't just something she signed on day one,
Right, that's a really important distinction because it shows there was an actual exchange. She got something in return for agreeing to the non-compete.
Exactly. And then Marone's situation was a little bit different. He tried to resign before his contract was like automatically up for renewal. And then later on, he actually filed a claim for wrongful termination.
Oh, wow. So there were all these extra layers of complexity.
Right. And I think these details just kind of remind us that these cases, they're not just these abstract legal principles. Like they involve real people's lives and livelihoods,
Yeah. For sure. It has real-world consequences.
Yeah, so to make a long story short, Rogers and Marone, they ended up doing exactly what those non-compete clauses were trying to prevent. They started their own competing court reporting business in Columbus called Spectrum Reporting.
Yeah, and you can imagine Runfola wasn't too happy about that.
No, not at all. So he sued them to try to enforce those non-competes, and that's really the main issue that the court had to grapple with.
Right, and that gets us to the central question under Ohio law. Were those non-compete clauses actually reasonable and therefore enforceable? And to figure that out, the court really relied on this earlier case, Raymond v. Van Valera, which kind of set the standard for how we evaluate these agreements.
Okay, so the Raymond test, that's like the key framework here, right?
Yeah, that's the big one.
Yeah.
It lays out these five main factors that Ohio courts are going to consider when they're looking at a non-compete and trying to decide if it's fair and legally sound.
Okay, so break down those five factors for us.
All right, so the first one is time and geographic scope. Basically, how long does the restriction last and where does it apply geographically? So, is it a year? Is it 5 years? Is it the whole state? Is it just a specific city?
Okay, makes sense of time and space.
Exactly. Then the second factor is about trade secrets or confidential information. So, did the employee actually learn any trade secrets or gain access to confidential stuff while they were working there that the non-compete is trying to protect?
Okay, so like, are they trying to prevent the employee from spilling the beans or something?
Right, exactly. It's about protecting legitimate business interests.
Gotcha. Okay, what's the third factor?
So a third one looks at the type of competition that's being restricted. So is the non-compete really aimed at preventing unfair competition, like, using inside knowledge or client relationships that you built while you were working there? Or is it just trying to stifle ordinary competition in the market? Like, is it just saying you can't work in this industry at all?
Okay, so it's about being specific to the actual harm, not just trying to shut someone out completely.
Right, it has to be reasonable.
Okay, and the fourth factor.
The fourth one is all about the impact on the employee's livelihood. So, does the non-compete create an undue hardship for them? Can they still use their skills and experience to earn a living, or does it basically prevent them from working in their field?
Right. Yeah, that's a big one. You can't just like completely destroy someone's ability to work.
Exactly, it has to be balanced.
All right. And then the fifth and final factor.
The fifth one is about whether the employee's skills were actually developed during their time at the company or if they already had those skills when they started. So did the company invest in their training and development, or were those skills already part of the employee's skill set?
Makes sense. So it's kind of like, you know, if a company helped you develop specific skills, they might have a stronger argument for protecting those skills.
Right. It's about protecting their investment.
Okay. So that's the Raymond test, those five factors. Now, there was this other wrinkle in this case. Right during the time that Rogers and Marone were employed, Runfola's business changed from a sole proprietorship to a corporation. So the court had to decide, like, okay, does that change anything about the non-compete agreements?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And what's really fascinating is that the court basically said, yeah, those non-compete agreements, they're still valid even after the business incorporated. Because the key thing was that Thomas Runfola, he was still the sole owner. And like the fundamental control of the business didn't really change.
So like even though the legal structure changed, the actual control didn't. So the agreements were still good.
Right. They looked at the substance of the situation, not just the technicalities.
Okay, that makes sense. So the court is looking at all this through the lens of the Raymond test. What did they ultimately decide about those non-compete clauses?
So they decided that the original 2-year ban on competing in all of Franklin County, and especially that lifetime ban on soliciting clients, they were just too broad. They created this unfair burden on Rogers and Marone. And actually, the court used some really strong language about that lifetime ban. They called it an economic death penalty.
Wow, economic death penalty. That's pretty serious.
It shows how strongly they felt that this restriction was just way too far-reaching.
Yeah, you can imagine that would make it almost impossible to work in your field.
Exactly. And I think that's even more relevant today. You know, people rely on their specific skills and experience to earn a living, and these overly broad restrictions can have a devastating impact in this job market where things are changing so fast.
Yeah, it really makes you think about how these non-competes impact someone's career and their freedom to work.
Right. It's not just about protecting the employer. It's about balancing those interests.
Okay. So the court said those original restrictions were too much, but they didn't just throw out the entire agreement, did they?
No, they didn't. And this is where we get to the blue pencil doctrine, which also comes from the Raymond case. And this doctrine is really interesting because it basically lets Ohio courts modify a non-compete agreement that they think is unreasonable.
So they can actually rewrite parts of it?
Yeah, it's like they take a blue pencil and they strike out the parts that are too much and they keep the parts that are reasonable, and then they make it enforceable that way.
Okay, so what did the court do with their blue pencil in this case? What did the modified terms look like?
So they narrowed things down quite a bit. First of all, they changed the geographic restriction from the entire Franklin County to just the city limits of Columbus, Ohio. And then they also shortened the time period for both the ban on competing and the ban on soliciting clients down to just 1 year.
Okay, so a much smaller area and a much shorter time frame.
Exactly, 1 year in Columbus city limits.
So for 1 year, Rogers and Marone were basically barred from doing court reporting work in Columbus and from trying to get Runfola's clients.
Right, and that's a pretty substantial change from the original agreement.
Definitely. So what was the court's thinking behind those specific modifications, like why Columbus? Why 1 year?
Well, they really focused on the idea of preventing unfair competition. They recognized that Runfola had a legitimate interest in protecting those client relationships that Rogers and Marone had built while they were working for him. But they also felt like a 1 year period would be enough time for him to reestablish those relationships without them, you know, swooping in and trying to take those clients away right away.
Right. So it's kind of like giving him a fair chance to rebuild without being undercut.
Exactly. And the shift from the whole county to just the city limits of Columbus probably reflects the main area where these court reporting services were actually being provided. You know, they were trying to find a balance between protecting Runfola's interests and still allowing Rogers and Marone to work in their field in the broader area.
Yeah. So it's like targeting the specific unfair advantage, not just stifling competition in general.
Right. And it's worth noting that the court actually sent the case back to the trial court to figure out how much money Runfola had actually lost as a result of Rogers and Marone breaching the modified agreement, you know, the one that the Supreme Court had created.
So even with the modifications, there could still be damages awarded for that initial breach.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so we've talked about the majority opinion, but there was a partial dissent, right? What was Justice H. Brown's issue with the decision?
So Justice Brown actually agreed with changing the lifetime ban on client solicitation down to 1 year. He was on board with that part, but he didn't like the 1-year ban on practicing court reporting within Columbus city limits.
Interesting. So he was okay with limiting client solicitation, but not with limiting the geographic area where they could work.
Right, that was his sticking point.
So why did he think that was too much, even with the reduced area?
Well, he pointed out that the original agreement only restricted competition within Franklin County, the whole county, but the majority's modification by focusing on Columbus and then saying they couldn't serve any client with a Columbus office, regardless of where Rogers and Marone were actually located, it kind of expanded the restriction in a way that went beyond the original agreement.
Oh, so even though the physical area was smaller, the restriction on who they could work for became potentially wider because of that client location clause.
Exactly. It created this weird situation where even if they were working outside of Columbus, if they had a client with an office in Columbus, they couldn't work with them. So Justice Brown felt like that wasn't just making the original agreement reasonable, it was creating a new restriction that could be even more limiting.
Right. It's kind of like a loophole almost.
Yeah. And he argued that awarding monetary damages to Runfuller would have been a better way to protect his interests without going too far in restricting their ability to work. You know, he really felt like the majority's decision swung the pendulum too far in favor of the employer.
All right, so we've covered a lot here. We've talked about the specifics of the case, the legal framework, the court's decision, and even the dissenting opinion. What are some key takeaways from all this that you think our listeners should really remember?
Well, I think there are several really important lessons here. First of all, Rogers v. Runfola really highlights how crucial the concept of consideration is in making these non-compete agreements legally binding. You know, Rogers' situation, where the agreement only became enforceable when she was promised job security. That's a perfect example of how that basic contract principle works in employment law.
Right. It shows that it has to be a two-way street. Both sides have to get something out of it.
Exactly. It can't just be a one-sided restriction.
Okay. What else is important to take away from this case?
Another really big takeaway is the importance of being super specific about geographic limitations in these non-compete clauses. You know, the court really zeroed in on that difference between Franklin County and the city of Columbus, and that shows just how closely they'll scrutinize the area that's being restricted. If it's too broad or too vague, it's much more likely to be challenged and potentially struck down or modified.
So employers really need to be careful about defining that geographic scope as narrowly as possible.
Absolutely. And the third key takeaway is that Ohio courts, following that precedent from Raymond, they're generally more inclined to try to fix a non-compete agreement that's too broad rather than just throwing it out completely. You know, they'll use that blue pencil to make it reasonable and enforceable.
So it's not an all or nothing situation.
Right. And that's important for both sides to understand. Employers shouldn't assume that a super aggressive non-compete is automatically going to be totally unenforceable. And employees shouldn't assume that any challenge will result in the whole thing being thrown out. It could go either way.
And what about the whole business structure change with Renfola going from a sole proprietorship to a corporation? Did that have any lasting impact on how we think about these agreements?
Well, even though the court decided that the transfer of the agreements to the new corporation was valid in this case, because the ownership and control were basically the same, it still reminds us that just because a business structure changes, it doesn't automatically mean that any unreasonable non-compete terms suddenly become okay.
So the focus is always on the restrictions themselves, not on the technicalities of the business structure.
Right, it's about the substance of the agreement and whether those restrictions are actually reasonable and necessary to protect the employer's interests.
Okay, so it sounds like Rogers v. Runfola is still a really important case for anyone dealing with non-competes in Ohio, whether you're an employer, an employee, or a lawyer.
Absolutely. It gives us this clear guidance on how courts are going to balance the different interests involved. And it really stresses the importance of drafting these agreements carefully so that they protect the employer without unfairly restricting the employee's ability to work and use their skills.
It's that constant balancing act that we talked about earlier.
Right. And it's not always easy to find that balance, but this case gives us a good framework for thinking about it.
You know, looking at how the court changed the restriction from the whole county to just Columbus, and then thinking about Justice Brown's concerns about that client location clause, it really makes you wonder, you know, in today's world where remote work and digital services are so common, how do we even define a reasonable geographic scope anymore? Like, if someone could potentially compete with their old employer from anywhere in the world, does that make these traditional ideas about geography kind of obsolete?
That's a great question. And it shows how these legal principles developed in a different time are being challenged by the way we work now. You know, how do you define a reasonable area when someone could be working from a different state or even a different country? It suggests that maybe courts are going to have to shift their focus away from physical location and maybe look more at the specific client relationships and whether there's a real risk of those relationships being unfairly exploited. You know, the core principles of balancing employer and employee interests, those are still important. But how we apply them in this new world, that's something we're still figuring out. And cases like Rogers v. Runfola, they give us a starting point for that conversation.
Yeah, it definitely gives us a lot to think about.
For sure. It's a case that's still relevant, and it'll be interesting to see how these concepts continue to evolve as the nature of work changes.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for taking this deep dive with me. It's been really insightful.
My pleasure. Always happy to talk about these fascinating cases.
All right. Until next time.
Yeah. See you then.